Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good.
I was reading in the paper recently about a seminar that I didn't attend this year, but there was a seminar given recently in New York at a tasting where there were over 800 producers mm-hmm. of biodynamic wine.
Hey, I mean, you've gone to the Nicolas Joly gives that lecture, right?
Nicolas Joly is...
And you've gone to that lecture in the past.
Nicolas Joly is a famous winemaker from France. He owns a very famous and historic vineyard in France. Mm-hmm. He's also author of a book called Wine from Sky to Earth, Growing and Appreciating Biodynamic Wine, which you can pick up. It's a little weird
biodynamic
read.
Biodynamics are... most of the people who are into this are a little bit peculiar.
You're a little bit peculiar. Sorry, you didn't think I was going there, did you?
You caught me by surprise, I got to tell you. It's hard to do.
The idea of biodynamic winemaking sort of goes beyond organic, but mm-hmm. to be biodynamic, you pretty much exceed organic prescriptions. But
these guys do some really... We'll call it interesting things in their videos.
The idea of biodynamic agriculture comes from a guy named Rudolf Steiner, who in 1924, he believed in biodynamics and rhythms of life and alchemical principles of life, but he talked specifically about agriculture. Sounds wacky, right? I'm already in the realm of wacky.
But, yeah, you're there.
But
you made it.
But
look
some
at you.
Of the best wineries in the world.
2 minutes into the show and you're a whack job already.
What they believe is that the vineyard is a living organism. You need mm-hmm. to consider the vineyard a living organism in its totality.
Right. Not just the vines, not just the grapes growing.
Right. And so where modern agribusiness says come in, if you have a pest problem, put some weed killer down, put some pesticide down, kill all the weeds, kill the pesticides, grow the vines.
Grow the stuff you want, kill the stuff you don't want, and move on.
And it says, you know, each individual plant is fine. We don't care about what else is living in the soil. We mm-hmm. don't need that. Well, you know, honestly, that leads to bland wines mm-hmm. Because... In the higher end of wines, even in the, you know, $10 bottle range of wines in France and in Europe and more so in the United States, each vineyard, mm-hmm. because of the different little things, the bugs and the flora and the microflora and the microfauna that live in the soil, give a different taste to the wine because the vineyard is expressed in the fruit of the grapes. Believe it or not, that really is the case.
And we're not just talking about vineyards here. People do biodynamic farming for all different kinds of agricultural products.
And more of our friends who are winemakers are switching over to biodynamics, and more of the best wineries in the world are switching over to biodynamic principles, which is everything from here. Let me read a little bit about it. This is from an article by T.J. Fodoraro, who writes about wine for the Star Ledger. He's also the guy who gave me my first fine dining restaurant job when he was the manager of a restaurant in New Brunswick.
So he is a fool.
Years ago, exactly. In addition to avoiding chemicals of all kinds, biodynamic growers concoct bizarre-sounding soil treatments. One is made from oak bark fermented in an animal skull and apply them according to the phases of the moon and the positions
Stop.
Of the planets.
Oak bark in an animal skull.
They also put cow dung in a cow horn and let it ferment underground.
Extraordinary.
They talk about the vineyard as a living organism and believe their vines to be holistically connected not just to the soil but to the entire universe. They say things like, all living things are made up of frequencies that harmonize with each other, just like the notes on a piece of music. Okay.
And you will occasionally hear them go into the vineyard and go, sorry.
Naked and painted blue. But that's why I don't know. Here's the deal, but this is more also from TJ.
Wherever you were about to go, I'm glad you didn't go there.
I was thinking of a couple of hot winemakers I know. But it's hard to argue with the results. Some of the world's most critically acclaimed winemakers have converted or are in the process of converting to biodynamic farming from France. Well, Nicolas Joly is a leader of the pack. His wines are amazing. But Zind Humbrecht in the Alsace, Domaine Leroy in Burgundy, Chapoutier in the Rhone Valley, Pingus in Spain, Arajo in California, Robert Sinsky in California, our friend Johannes Hirsch in Austria.
I mean, you're talking about some of the top
top, top wine producers in the world, period, and the tops in each of their regions.
And I love this little bit in TJ's article because he uses a phrase that I think he invented because he calls when he's really blown away by a wine, mm-hmm. he calls it a blow-away wine. And I love that because many years ago when I was that's how I learned about wines from TJ's little nomenclature there. Of the 250-plus wines on display at last week's tasting, I, meaning TJ, had a chance to try maybe half, of which an amazingly high percentage qualify as blow-away wines. Mm-hmm. And these wines really do, I mean, look, you can't argue with success. And whether that's because the alchemical principles work, or whether that's because it just someone is, in order to follow these principles, you need to be in your vineyard every day and pay very close attention.
And I think that's what I see. I see people who are tied to their vineyards, who really understand what's happening every day in their vineyards. And do I think it has anything to do with the
cow horn of dung?
Cow horn of dung buried in the ground? I truly do not. So all of you who thought that I was the wacky one, you can put that away. I just think it has nothing to do with it. The crystal that you bury upside down in the vineyard in order to pray to the moon god, I think that has nothing to do with it. What I do think it has to do with is these people are a little bit psychotic and a little bit...
No one in your family ever buried the Virgin Mary statue upside down in the front in order to sell the house.
Not to my knowledge.
I bet it happened. That's an old Catholic superstition.
Not to my knowledge.
I forget, like you bury a statue of the Virgin Mary, I think you bury her right side up. When you want to sell the house, you bury her upside down and then you turn her over again.
But then she can't breathe.
Maybe she just doesn't like to be on her head, so she makes you sell the house. Anyway.
Get out.
The scientific community has been reluctant to consider biodynamics as a serious subject of inquiry, but several studies have found quantifiable, if modest, benefits. This is from a British wine writer, Jamie Good, who says, "We can tentatively conclude that biodynamics seems to work when tested scientifically, though not as dramatically as many would claim." So what we're saying here is, I've had some wines that are biodynamic. Let's say on the label, and they're not very good.
Of course.
But most of the producers that are willing to go the time and trouble and expense of getting their wine, growing their grapes biodynamically, and then getting them certified to be biodynamic are people who care a lot about the quality of
wine. And I think that's the big thing, is they're in tune with their vineyards. Okay, they have a broader understanding with their vineyards than most people who don't take that much time in their vineyards. So whether it's the cow or the egg, what's the difference?
Yeah, whatever. Okay, I'm done with that one.
You're not going to make fun of my cow, right?
No. I got another little piece of news article here. An oak tree planted during the reign of Louis XIV has been sold to a Bordeaux cooper to make a barrel out of it. An oak tree planted during the reign of Louis XIV.
That's an old oak tree.
Is going to be cut into barrels. Do you know what the tree went for?
The tree itself?
Well, what did they charge for it?
I have no idea.
37,000 euros. That's a $50,000 tree.
That's a pretty expensive tree.
That's pretty expensive. I bet that's going to be expensive wine that barrel gets made out of the oak. Le Chêne de Morat is the last of an exceptional parcel of tronqué oak from central France planted in 1669 during the reign of Louis XIV.
It makes me sad that they cut it down.
Yeah, I know, but I'm going to try and drink the wine if I can kind of schween my way into a tasting, because I'm certainly not going to pay for it. Anyway, we'll be back in just a moment talking with Chef Allison Barshak about her restaurant in suburban Philadelphia. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is a chef from just outside Philadelphia. Allison Barshak earned a national reputation as the debut chef at Striped Bass, which has recently reopened under different ownership. But she was there the year it was awarded Esquire's coveted title, the best new restaurant in the country. She opened at her sophisticated suburban bistro, Allison at Bluebell in May of 2003, where she has received extreme success, 3 bells from the Philadelphia Inquirer, and kind words from Craig Laban, who's been on this show and is known as the meanest man in Philadelphia. Kudos to you, Allison.
I didn't realize that.
Allison, yes, welcome to the show. You didn't realize he had said kind words or that he was the meanest man in Philadelphia?
No, that he was the meanest man in Philadelphia.
We had him on the show, and before we brought him on, we did a little research, and that kept turning up everywhere. In publications, he's been called the meanest man in Philadelphia, and we asked him about it, and he said, Yep.
Uh-oh.
No, you know what it was? There was a public, I think Philadelphia Magazine did a poll. And they were like, and he said, look at who else were the meanest men in Philadelphia, like the top tycoons, the top sports people, and Craig LeBron. He was like, oh, it was great. I love it. So.
Well, I'm glad he's happy with it.
Well, and you got him to say nice things about you, so you must be pretty darn amazing.
Oh, well, I was pleasantly surprised at his kind words.
So, Allison, you started your career with a lot of success, started your career at Striped Bass anyway, with a lot of success and critical acclaim really early on. Do you think that was helpful, hurtful? What do you think about all that crazy press you got?
Well, people think I started my career at Striped Bass,
right.
And that's kind of...
Obviously not. You were chef of Striped Bass.
Right, but I worked a lot in the business before that, but Striped Bass... You know, they offered me a job, and it was just going to be a seafood restaurant, and then it just became something totally different. I think it was extremely overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty scary. And I don't think that I was ready for what happened. I mean, I just wanted to be a chef of a restaurant and do what I did, and it kind of put me in a situation that I was unfamiliar with, and there was no script for it, and nobody mm-hmm. could really tell you how to handle it. And, I mean, I learned from situations, so I learned a lot. But it was really tough.
Yeah,
it was tough to balance everything and to act a way that I was not familiar with.
I think the world has changed a lot in the last 20 years or so, certainly mm-hmm. in the United States, where winemakers and chefs have become like these rock stars, these icons, you know, from the Food Network or the Wine Spectator or Wine Enthusiast have made these chefs and winemakers all of a sudden rock stars.
Yep.
And generally in the past, these were great minds, but were always behind the scenes.
Yes.
So you guys, you never got trained. You never got taught to be in the public eye. That wasn't why you got into the business. I mean, Francis and I mostly work in the front of house. So it's easier for us to talk or to be in the limelight or to be in the focus of attention, where a lot of chefs just don't enjoy that.
What did you learn that you said you learned some things from being thrust into that situation? What did you learn?
I learned how to talk to customers. I learned that was just about the press and about how it's good and it's bad and it's scary,
mm-hmm.
But I learned how to communicate with customers. I mean, when I was very young, and you have people that are diners that are coming in and spending a lot of money to eat, and they want to talk to the chef. Well, what do you say to them? You know, it was very awkward for me to go to a table. You know, I'm dealing with scheduling dishwashers and other cooks and writing menus and dealing with purveyors. And
right, where are the tomatoes coming from?
Right, yeah. And to switch gears like that, and, you know, you have to feel confident and you have to feel like you have life experiences to discuss things. I mean, they don't really want to know about your day. You know,
yeah.
They, you know, you think they do, but they don't. It's
yeah.
about the customer. It's not about me.
You know, it's funny. Mark and I have no problem coming up and talking to everybody. We just got into the restaurant business because we like to talk to everybody. We had to hire a chef. Our problem is if they try and ask us to cook their food, we can't do it.
Actually, our problem is if they ask us to shut up and go away. So we can't do that.
Well, I learned how to do it, and it took a long time. It was really uncomfortable when I used to have to go to a table. And I love my customers. I mean, mm-hmm. I have great customers. I have incredible repeat business.
Well, let's
I try and talk to everybody.
Let's let everybody know that now you really have come full circle. In your current restaurant, I understand it's 65 seats, and you have an open kitchen, and you talk to everybody.
Yes.
You really went full circle on that one.
I did, but I have an open kitchen because the last restaurant I had was a closed kitchen,
mm-hmm.
and so I had no clue what was going on the other side of the door. And as a chef owner, I don't have any partners or investors. It's really important that I know who's coming through the door. I can see their faces. I can see what's going on. I can read the dining room. So, I mean, the only logical answer to that was to kind of have an open window where you could see both the front and the back.
You know, that's really interesting because I think most people think that restaurants have open kitchens, and I think a lot of restaurants do have open kitchens, to kind of give the diner a look into what's happening in the kitchen. I think most people don't think of it from the other perspective of maybe the chef wants to see what's going on in the dining room.
Oh, it's so important.
And I'll share with you. Go ahead.
It really is key, and it, you know, and the customers get to feel confident that I'm there, whether, you know, I'm in the kitchen or I'm expediting, they always can see me.
Our chef, our guest today is Chef Allison Barsack. Her restaurant is Allison at Bluebell in suburban Philadelphia. We'll be talking more with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125. You know, Mark and I are always saying that long-term good environmental policy and good economic policy are one and the same. And that's not just for the government, it's also for small business and homeowners just like you. To help us put our money where our mouth is, we called E2ECTA. E2ECTA uses a team of specialists to find practical ways for your business or home to conserve energy and even to generate green energy that the utility company then has to buy back from you. That generates a different kind of green for your bottom line. We've gone solar at our restaurants. We're now producing cheap, non-polluting electricity, and with the help of E2ECTA, we did it for very little money. The government programs available to get you set up are unbelievable. We're talking about grants here, not loans, but grants. E2ECTA will help you find the right programs for you, and they'll do the paperwork. You keep the profits. It's a no-brainer, people. For lower energy usage, more profits for yourself, call E2ECTA at 908-359-9300 or click on their link at restaurantguysradio.com. E2ECTA for total energy solutions. Hey, you're back at the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis from Stage Left at Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. And our guest today is a fellow restaurateur, Chef Allison Barsack's restaurant is Allison at Bluebell in suburban Philadelphia. When she was chef at Striped Bass, when it first opened under the original ownership, she was the chef of what was called at that time the best new restaurant in the country by Esquire magazine. And we're talking about her 65-seat open kitchen place where if you go there, you'll get to see her because she sees everything. We were talking, Allison, before that about having an open kitchen. And I'm not crazy about having an open kitchen. And when I go out to dinner, I don't like to sit at the chef's table.
Right.
Because I work in a darn kitchen. You know what I mean?
Because I spend too much time seeing chefs curse at each other.
And no cursing in my kitchen.
Yeah, well, in open kitchens, of course.
No, but seriously, we're very calm. I got to a point where I said, you know what? If I have to yell at somebody, it's like I don't want them to work for me.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, we don't curse and we don't yell, but calm isn't the word I would use.
Yeah.
That's it. There's definitely a different word.
Allison, we got to go up to at least frenetic. You know what I mean?
Okay, frenetic.
Well, I'll tell you, we do a lot of we have a lot of restaurateurs and restaurant professionals who listen to the show, and we do a lot of restaurant consulting. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we taught when we consult for chef owners, you said as a chef owner, one of the reasons you want an open kitchen is so that you can see the dining room as well as the dining room can see into the kitchen. We point that out a lot. I find Mark and I are partners. We're both front of house guys. We have a chef who's been with us for a long time now. He's really great. But we had a number of chefs over the years. With one set of eyes, and if you have to spend a lot of your time in the kitchen, that's out of sight of your customers and, frankly, out of sight of the cash drawer.
Yep.
And out of sight of the, well, you're a BYO, but in many places, out of sight of the liquor.
And out of sight of your employees.
That's so hard.
Yeah.
You know, people have accused us in the past of being front of house centric. I mean, in the distant past, because we're front of house guys. We're not. We didn't come. That's where we came from. Now I like to think of us as overall restaurateurs. But it's not about being front of house centric. It's about being customer centric.
Customer centric. The customers are in the front of the house.
I agree.
So the focus is on the customer.
And it's about the food that they get and the service they get and the wine they get. But it's basically, are they smiling or not? You know,
right.
That's what it comes down to. Do you agree?
Yes. But sometimes people enjoy food in a different way that you think you enjoy food. And I always get nervous because I say, you know, they have their food. It doesn't look like they're happy. It doesn't look like they're enjoying it. So, I mean, sometimes some people just don't smile when they're happy.
Right. No, it's absolutely true. We have a couple of customers like that. Hey, listen, this is a lot of fun. We're going to talk more when we come back after the news with Allison Barsack. She is the chef at Allison and Bluebell, one of the best restaurants in the Philadelphia area that you should go visit. We'll be talking more with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Today our guest is Chef Allison Barshak. Chef Barshak earned a national reputation as the debut chef at Striped Bass many years ago. The year it was awarded Esquire's coveted title, the best new restaurant in the country. She opened her sophisticated suburban bistro, Allison at Bluebell, in May 2003, where she prepares contemporary American cuisine with an emphasis, much like Striped Bass, on fish. Now, Allison, one of our friends from a long time is a guy named Rick Moonen, who was the chef at RM Seafood in Vegas right now, but was at Oceana. And he's for a long time, I think that he and Eric Repair were the two top fish cooks, fish chefs in New York City. And one of the things we've always talked about with him is, you know, being a chef with a focus on fish, being a fish chef, it's a different sensibility, I think. Tell us about that. Do you approach food differently?
I do, but I think I approach food differently than Eric and Rick. When I was offered the position at Striped Bass, I didn't know a lot about seafood, and so I took a 3-day course at CIA on seafood. And I thought, you know, if we're going to do seafood, we're going to do seafood. And a lot of chefs use veal and chicken stock bases to make sauces for fish, and we don't do that. I like to use a lot of vegetables and just natural vinaigrettes because I think the flavor and texture of fish is so unique that I don't like to cover it up with veal and chicken stock reductions. So I think that texturally fish is totally different than any other protein out there, and each fish is different.
So you try and keep them separate?
Yes, I do. Like, I don't do a scallop and shrimp dish. I don't do a mussel and clam dish. I keep each piece of seafood separate. And, I mean, I used to only do seafood. Now I will mix, like, meat with fish. Like, we have a monkfish dish that has a Spanish slant to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a romesco, and we do a wilted salad with chorizo and roasted garlic and sherry vinegar. And there's Manchego cheese in that. But
it sounds pretty good.
It's really good. So, I mean, for me, I think the texture of the fish and the subtle differences, it's a whole new world.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you just alluded to is that you took a culinary class at CIA, Culinary Institute of America, a 3-day class. Now, you didn't do this the way a lot of people are doing it today. You got into this business and apprenticed for a long time rather than going to school. Now, we had Patrick O'Connell from Inn at Little Washington on the show last week, and he went the same route. He apprenticed. This is a job, an occupation, where apprenticeships still are very, very valuable and valued. Do you think that that's a way that people need to go now, or have things changed?
I think it really depends on the individual. I mean, I would have given my eye teeth to go to culinary school, but my parents wouldn't let me go to culinary school. I went to regular college.
Yeah, we went to regular college, too.
Right. It was good, but, you know, for me, I didn't see where it was taking me because I like to cook. But I think it depends on the individual. I think some people require basics and require a curriculum, and some people don't. But I've taught myself. I mean, I learn from people around me. I never really had a mentor. I learn by the people working next to me every day, and they all bring something to the table. And I travel a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And when I travel, I taste things, I smell things, and usually that's what my menus are made up of. Instead of taking pictures, I bring back the flavors.
Right, the mental images.
Yes.
Do you know what's interesting, though? We have a lot of, you know, as anybody in the restaurant business, where you work with a lot of young people, you know?
Yep.
And some people are in the business for a period of time and move on and do other things, and some people are, you know, in the business and will stay in the business.
Mm-hmm.
We always counsel young people because we're in a university town, and it's a great resource for finding really smart, highly motivated, intelligent people. But we always motivate our staff to stay in school, or if they were to go to culinary school instead, that would be a good idea. Because one of the things that Mark and I encountered, and Mark, you majored in, you know, a bunch of different things. I majored in a bunch of different things, none of them having to do with restaurants. But when we went off in business on our own, I know that there are bank loans we wouldn't have gotten,
no doubt,
mortgages we wouldn't have gotten, if we didn't have that piece of paper that that
but
that
not
university
just that.
Degree.
Having a business background helped me put together a business plan that the bank liked to see.
Yeah.
The bank wanted to see a business plan. They wanted to see those types.
So don't feel so bad about that college education. It's you know probably it's helping us all in ways we never thought of.
I also learned how to figure stuff out in if I had 12 straight hours. I could figure out almost any problem that that needed to be solved.
Right.
So I learned that in college.
Yeah, I met a lot of people from all over the world in college, and my college roommate from Colombia, South America, and I actually just reunited with her 2 weeks ago. I met her up with her in Brussels, where she moved. And so I met a lot of people in college, and that was because I went to Boston University, which is pretty international.
Now you have an do you still maintain a residence in New York City?
Yes.
Now so you have your own restaurant in suburban Philadelphia,
yes.
And you also have a residence in New York City.
Yes.
You spend a lot of time on the road there, Allison?
No. It only takes me like 2 hours.
Yeah, it's actually not that far.
It's not that far, and it's great to go back to New York. I love it. It's exciting.
Allison, I want you one time on the drive, either to or from Philadelphia to stop in New Brunswick because we're almost equidistant between them.
Okay.
Poke your head into place.
Did you know fact. Did you know that the Declaration of Independence was read from the steps of Christ Church in downtown New Brunswick on July 5th, 1776?
I did not.
Because it was signed in Philadelphia and then sent to New York, and New Brunswick was the stopover.
Wow.
Isn't that just a little piece of history?
Amazing New Brunswick lore. Here it is at the restaurant, guys. You get it all here.
Now, one of the things that we talk about a lot on the show is sustainability, buying from small producers, and sort of eating food and getting food out of the earth in ways that are kind to the earth and that our grandchildren will still be able to do. Mm-hmm. And in fish, it's sort of even hard. It's so complicated to even keep up with what's endangered and what's not. Do you concern yourself with that kind of stuff? And how do you deal with it if you do?
I like wild fish, and I don't know if it's politically correct to like wild fish.
Sure it is.
I only have one farm-raised fish on my menu right now. I actually have wild salmon and farm-raised salmon,
mm-hmm.
because wild salmon's so expensive right now. But I feel like moderation, and I feel like if you buy things that are seasonal and you do things in moderation and everybody treats the earth that way instead of just going overboard, that's treating it kindly and being responsible. So I like the way wild fish tastes.
Yeah.
I like to buy domestic. I like domestic crab meat. I think tastes a lot better than shipping crab meat from Venezuela where it's a washed product, or mm-hmm. pasteurizing it so it's cooked two times, or getting
right.
it from Indonesia. And I think it makes a big difference. I think that people aren't aware of the difference. They think giant lumps of crab meat equals flavor,
mm-hmm.
which it doesn't. So I'm constantly educating people about flavors and local fish. And I feel like because most people go for what the big seller is, I get to introduce my customers to fish like drum. Like I'll sell black drum and red drum mm-hmm. and other fish that larger restaurants won't buy because I talk to my customers every
right.
day and say,
yep.
try this fish, and they trust me.
Red drum is a very interesting fish. It's mm-hmm. it's tasty and different than a lot of other fish out there.
But
yeah.
I think you really hit on something, Allison. I think it's a reason that people would seek out your restaurant, and also allows you to do some things that, like Mark and I do as well with our chef, Anthony Bucco. If you own, 60 restaurants, and you're going to mm-hmm. put it on a laminated, brightly colored menu with a little starburst next to it that says special, it better say bass, tuna, or, halibut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can't say drum, because it's not selling. Because
right.
the teeny bopper is not going to sell the drum.
That's right.
You know, and I think that is an advantage of going to a small, artisanal place, a restaurant that's a part of the community with somebody like you in the kitchen.
Right, and talking to yesterday somebody talked to me about scallops. And, I went through the whole thing about dry scallops, wet scallops, and, telling them and relating to them, because I learned about food the way most people learn by trial and error. I said, I never knew that I liked scallops until I tasted a dry scallop.
Yeah, I thought I hated scallops growing up.
Yeah.
Just thought I did.
Yep.
Our guest today is Chef Allison Barshak. She is the chef owner of Allison at Bluebell. She was the opening chef of Striped Bass, and we're going to talk a little bit about the reincarnation of Striped Bass right now, but she was the original chef of Striped Bass when it received the coveted award, the best new restaurant in the country. You should check out her restaurant in suburban Philadelphia. We'll be talking more with her in just a moment. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Chef Allison Barshak. She is the chef owner of Allison and Bluebell, one of the most noted restaurants in suburban Philadelphia, and has also received a lot of national acclaim. You have a big thing going on in Philadelphia, Allison, a festival that a lot of people from around our area go to every year. It's called The Cook and the Book. What's that all about, and what are you doing specifically in it?
Well, it's a festival where they pair cookbook authors and restaurant owners, and it's a lot of fun. I've been doing it for a long time. When I was at the first Book and Cook many years ago, I was a guest at Frog Restaurant when Diana Kennedy was the cookbook author, and it was such an incredible experience. So we take the restaurant and we turn it into the cookbook author's restaurant for the night. We collaborate on her recipes, and she, you know, comes in and talks to the customers. And Joanne Weir is our guest chef, and this is the third year in a row that we've done this together. And she has several books. So this year we're going to use recipes from two of her books. And we're pretty much sold out for the evening. And it's fun for the cooks. It's fun for the guests. And we have a good time just trying new things and learning new techniques. And it's kind of like a trip without leaving the restaurant.
Isn't it hard to collaborate with a cookbook author? We've done it a number of times. Our chef, Anthony Bucco, has done it a number of times with authors who've come in, and we've sort of cooked dishes inspired by their books, if not slavishly following their recipes. Would you say the food is more inspired by her book or an absolute rendition of the recipes in the book?
She has some great recipes, and the thing that's great about Joanne is that she was a restaurant chef many years ago, but she's not anymore. So she really defers to me, and that was great the first time. She said to me, you know, it's your restaurant, these are your customers, you do what you think is right, and we worked on the recipes together, and she tasted everything, and we followed her recipes. But what's interesting is her book is a tapas book. My customers want, you know, a starch, a veg, and a protein.
Right.
So what I'm doing is I'm taking the spirit of some of her recipes, and I'm following her recipes, but, like, she has a red wine risotto with radicchio, which is great, but for $62 for three courses, I need to give somebody a protein.
Right, yeah, you're adding components to it.
Yes. We're doing that with wild straight bass.
I was going to say, because you have to give me a lot of radicchio for me to feel like I got my $62
right. That's
you know
right.
I mean? You have to give me a suitcase of radicchio to take home with me.
All you need to do is shave a couple truffles in the risotto,
yeah,
and I'll be fine.
There you are. Now, you are doing as well something that, and I'll tell you, I could never do this because I travel with Mark, and he gets on my nerves. Okay, we go. And I'm
Francis
not kidding.
Francis is like, I'll see you tomorrow. I'm taking a day away. Talk to you later.
Literally, last time we were in France on a buying trip, I was like, yeah, you go out to dinner. I'm staying home. He's like, oh, we've reached Francis's alone time. He needs to himself. And I was like, hey, that's exactly correct. Get away from me. You're going with...
It's so obvious that I'm the married one with kids.
Oh, please get away from me. So I got my book, and I got aloneness. So you're going to take a bunch of people to Tuscany and go eating with them?
Yes, and cooking and shopping.
Tell me about this trip. How many people are going, and what's the deal, and how do people find out about it?
Well, we're staying at this gorgeous restored villa. We're going to have 5 cooking classes. There's a pool for after class, or maybe before class. I don't know if you should swim after eating. You have to wait a half hour.
You have to wait a half hour, exactly.
You know what?
What?
I'm 40 years old now. I don't have to wait a half hour.
Oh, okay. Is that okay. The rule?
I get to swim whenever I want.
He's the dad.
So, okay.
And so it's 15 people, you say. What does it cost to join you on this thing?
I think it's about $4,000.
That's not
bad. It sounds great. And you're doing cooking classes for people every single day.
Yep.
And any tourist things, any other dinners, anything like that?
It's the meals every day. It's tours every day. We're going to see a cheese. We're going to olive groves. We're going to a ceramic studio. We're going to a cheese producer. We're going to. There's a lot more.
And where in Tuscany are you going to be?
In the Chianti region.
Nice.
Now, and how would people find out about this if they wanted to join you?
Well, they can look at my website, and there's a link to it.
What's your website?
It's allison@bluebell.com.
And what we'll do is we'll put that on restaurantguysradio.com so people can link right to you.
That'd be great.
Anyway, so Allison, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to talk with us today. This has been a lot of fun. You're great. We're going to come down to your restaurant and harass you.
All right, well, I'm going to come and harass you, too.
Well, that's great. We have a little restaurant love fest going on.
A little harass fest, anyway.
It's tough love. It's restaurant love. It's tough love. Thanks, Allison.
Thanks,
take care.
Allison.
Bye-bye. That was Allison Barshek. Her restaurant is Allison at Bluebell in suburban Philadelphia. We're going to link you to her website from our website, and you can check her out and go down there. Her restaurant is BYO, and Pennsylvania liquor laws are really tough. And
arcane. Let's use the word arcane.
And it's an open kitchen, 60-seat restaurant. You go down there, you'll get to meet Allison, and we're definitely going to go. We ate her food, actually. We didn't get to talk about it. We ate her food at Striped Bass many years ago, many times.
Used to go there a lot.
And, we're going to have it again real soon.
And we're just about 35 minutes outside of Philadelphia.
So we'll be talking with you more in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis from Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. You know, we just had Allison Barshek, who's the chef at Allison on Bluebell in suburban Philly, and she sounds great, by
the way. She really does.
She sounds great. And we ate her food when she was the chef at Striped Bass a number of times. Now, one of the things that we didn't touch on, it escaped my mind, she uses a wood-burning grill.
How did anything escape your mind?
I know. There was so much stuff in there, Mark. Something gets out.
Flytrap of a mind.
Something gets out there once in a while. But she uses a wood-burning grill.
Mm-hmm.
And we use a wood-burning grill.
Wood-burning grills offer a lot of benefit on the plus side. They're great to use. They impart a lot of flavor. And she cooks with mesquite, usually, which is a little heavier flavor than what we use at Stage Left.
Oak and fruit woods.
Which is fruit woods and a little bit of oak, and they tend to impart a little lighter, sweeter taste. But using a wood-burning grill is a very, very difficult thing. And a lot of not great restaurants that I've been to use wood-burning grills, and it can be a very, very dangerous thing when in the wrong hands, because wood-burning grills are difficult to use.
Well, because you get hot spots, and if they're real wood-burning grills, not gas-assisted wood-burning grills, you got to stoke a fire all night. Mm-hmm. You've got to play like caveman.
Well, it's not caveman. It's just like your fireplace.
Right, and there are
sometimes
hot spots.
Sometimes it's really hot. Sometimes it's not going as well. Some nights the wood's really good. Some nights the night's a little wet.
And sometimes when the wood's not good and it's way too smoky, you go someplace with a wood-burning grill, because I really like that wood flavor. And the other thing is, it's a flavoring component. It's a method. And when we use smoke, I don't want people to know what it is.
Right.
It's a note in there.
Characteristic.
And it's a note in there, and it changes it, but you don't know exactly what it is. It's not articulable. Oh, I love that smoky taste. But when you go to a restaurant sometimes, and you're like, Oh, that's that tastes like it's been smoldering in the ashes
for a week. Yeah. If that's somebody's thrown something actually in the fireplace.
I think that's the mark of a young chef is, you know, somebody will get on a kick. They'll discover a new ingredient, and it will be in everything,
I'm
and
sorry,
it will be overdone.
I think my steak caught fire. Can you please get me another one?
Please not do that anymore. Anyway, we are so hard to please. My goodness, what incredible fusspots we are. I hope you've enjoyed this hour listening to these two incredible fusspots. I hope you come to our website and check it out. We're going to link you to Alison Barshak's restaurant in Philly, and we hope you eat well and do good. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12.